T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Small Talk, a show about small business for small business. Here's your host, Mark S. Lee.
Good morning and welcome to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee, brought to you by Domino's. Yes, Domino's have been a great partner of ours for the last several years. We appreciate their continued support. Good morning, Doak. How you doing?
I'm tired of this weather. I'm just tired of it.
You know, I'm worn out, man.
It's just, you know, brutal. In 10 days, I won't be here.
Let's clarify what you mean by that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be in Florida.
All right.
Enjoying some sun and fun, hopefully.
You got that annual Tiger Trip fast approaching.
That's right. I'm looking forward to it.
I know you are. But you know what? We are now in the month of March.
Yeah.
And March Madness is right around the corner. So I didn't get a chance to talk to you since last week. I will give a shout out and congratulations to Michigan State University.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, very welcome. And they play again in the next week, don't they?
Yep. They play again Saturday night.
All right.
So it'll be another big game. It's been... it's been a great year for both our college teams here in the state. So.
Well, and one thing I do want to say, and Doak and I were talking briefly before the show, that we are very fortunate to have two great coaches for two great institutions, and we also got other great universities. So congratulations to Michigan State Spartans and the University of Michigan. They'll be hooking back up next week. All right, as you know, this is your source for entrepreneurship for the state of Michigan, the city of Detroit, as well as across the country, because the show does air nationally via radio.com. We want you to sit back and relax and enjoy that nice hot a cup of coffee on this cold early March day with our very special first guest, Mr. Brad Gramlin. He's the director of enterprise sales for Comcast Business. They've been a great partner of ours as well. He oversees teams of technology experts from across the company's 3-state heartland region, which is Michigan, Indiana, and Kentucky. Brad, good morning and thanks for joining me. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark. I'm doing all right.
Good to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely.
Guys, heard you talking about March Madness. My favorite March Madness is College Wrestling National Tournament.
Really?
Which obviously Michigan and Michigan State have some great wrestlers, too.
Did you wrestle?
I did.
In college?
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah. No, too much knee damage in high school to want to compete in college.
We got to have you on for another segment and talk about that.
I'm excited for it. Yeah, let's do that.
Well, we're here to talk this morning about the employees working from home. So very briefly, before we jump right to the conversation, talk to us about your background, exactly what you're responsible for.
Yep. So my background is with the Comcast business team. I've been with Comcast since 2010, starting with our small business group based out of Indianapolis, Indiana, where I actually worked with some of the smaller businesses and home-based businesses in rural communities and throughout central Indiana. A couple years ago, I actually relocated here to Michigan, and I took over an enterprise sales team. And since January 1, I'm now directing that team.
And you know, are we going to hone in on home-based businesses and telecommuting? Doak and I were just talking about this past week with the weather being the way it was and people working from home. Let's talk about this telecommuting, if you will. You know, it continues to grow significantly across the country as well here in Metro Detroit. And I can imagine many of the telecommuters are working off their residential internet services, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So if this trend continues, if it continues to increase, is Comcast Business seeing a shift of more people signing up for business services at their home?
Yeah, we are. And it's a good topic. Both small businesses and large enterprises alike are taking advantage of having that kind of technology in your home, whether it's a home-based business trying to operate the entire organization from their home, or you've got larger enterprises like ourselves that rely on teleworkers who need the connectivity to drive the applications that their larger enterprises asking them to use from home.
Mm-hmm. And so right now you're offering, Comcast is offering 1 gig residential speed.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is the difference between the residential internet, if you will, internet service providers versus what Comcast Business offers?
Right, yeah. So the big difference if you're using a home-based residential service or a home-based business service is the businesses have a few more needs that your standard resident doesn't have. Their technical support needs are a little bit higher because they might have static IP addresses. They're connecting through VPNs or to servers off-site. maybe they're looking for some other hosted applications to run over that, like Microsoft Office 365 or Cloud Backup. And those are all things that a business service provider like Comcast can offer those home-based businesses.
So a company like mine, I have the Lee Group. Everybody knows that. I've had it since January of 08. Should I go with a business net internet service or provider versus the business internet plan versus a residential plan?
Yeah, and it's all dependent on your needs, Mark. And what we like to do is set up our potential customers with a local account executive who can either meet them at their home or meet them at a coffee shop, really do some discovery needs analysis to determine what's best for them. You know, if you are using some technology at your home that's very application-driven and having a higher level of technical support and maybe it's upload speed or static IP, if we determine that those things are very important to you, we're probably going to suggest that you use a business connection at your home.
And we know that there's so many people now, the gig economy, people are working from home, and companies have become even much more flexible in terms of letting people work from home,
right?
And the traffic and everything else, and technology, people are leveraging technology for the business standpoint. So just like we, as a residential customer, there are certain things that we look for when it comes to technology, when it comes to the internet. Talk to us, if you're an entrepreneur, what are some of the things that you should look for as you're considering some type of technology-based solution for your business?
Yeah, and when you're talking about the technology that you're going to need for your business, you really want to dive into what kind of applications you're going to be using. Small businesses have the same access to a lot of the CRM tools that the large enterprises are using.
Customer relationship management systems.
Exactly, yep. So the way that they manage those relationships with their customers, most of that stuff is cloud-based now. Nobody's putting servers in their home. So they want to know that. So then they want to know whether those applications need a static IP address. Is there a certain amount of upload speed that they need? Or maybe they need incredibly low latency. And then at that point, we're talking about delivering a fiber-dedicated internet into their home.
We are talking to Brad Gremlin this morning. He's the Director of Enterprise Sales for Comcast Business out of Plymouth, Michigan. He's responsible for their Heartland region, which consists of Michigan, Indiana, and Kentucky. He goes back and forth, if I recall, between Grand Rapids and the Detroit area. Is that right?
Yep. And then I get occasionally get to spend some time in my hometown in Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. All right. Congratulations. At least you get a chance to get three great cities here to enjoy.
Right.
As we talk about the phone services, a lot of us have ditched our home. I don't have a landline anymore. A lot of us, others have ditched your landlines as well. Talk about the voice services offered by Comcast Business for those businesses that are looking to run their companies more effectively. In other words, they don't have a landline.
Right.
Right? So talk to the listeners about the types of services that you offer that can still help them as well.
Right. Yeah. While you're correct that there has been a trend that people aren't using a traditional landline at home anymore, that's certainly not the case for businesses. What they're looking for now, though, is some more unified communication. And we've built a lot of software around our more traditional phone service so that if you're working from home and then you need to travel out to an appointment, we've got applications that you can sync to your iPhone or Android that connect back to your landline so you never miss a call. When you're the sole proprietor, that's very important to you. You can't miss those calls and miss the potential revenue.
Is that like a call forwarding feature, or is it slightly different from
that? It's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
So you can set it to call forward. You can set it to simultaneously ring your landline and your cell. You can make outbound calls with application that makes it look like you're calling from your desk. So it's all those applications that typically the larger enterprises would be able to do from a hosted phone service, but you can do it from a traditional phone line at your home now, too.
Wow. It's just amazing to me how technology continues to permeate our lives. And you know, I remember the days of the landlines. Everybody had a landline. And now I know it's just like we're trying to balance between the landlines and the cell phones. If you got a business, we got to figure out keep all this stuff straight.
Right.
And Comcast Business will help us to keep all of this stuff straight as well. Is that right?
That's absolutely true. And we're using a lot of software development to make things happen and make it easier to do business, especially for small businesses and these mid-market businesses. We actually like to brag that we now have more software developers sitting in Philadelphia than Facebook does at their corporate office.
Ooh, little stab there at Facebook. Yeah. No, that's all right. No problem. And let's talk about the cloud-based software.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I'm fortunate I have a cloud-based software, and you're right, I'm able to pull my documents down from anywhere. Mm-hmm. But how can having those cloud-based services help small business owners, again, run their businesses effectively?
Right. Yeah, so, you know, as long as you've got a strong connection at your business or your home, Comcast can even help you procure some of that cloud-based software. We're a Microsoft Premier provider, so we can help you procure licenses for Office 365 so that you can use your email, you can use your SharePoint, your Skype, all those great features that Microsoft puts together. We can sell licenses for DocuSign so that if you need to remotely gain signatures or contracts, and we can help you do that. Good. Cloud-based backup stuff through Carbonite. That we can do that all in-house and be a full consultant for a small business.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Brad, the cloud-based technology, when it first came out, I couldn't understand the concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a little bit more mature. Young people understand all this technology stuff. But once I figured it out, it is truly a lifesaver. It's a business saver. And a lot of times people will call me and say, hey, can you get that information to us now? And I'm always, I mean, I have an office, but I'm always on the road. And many times I'm pulling documents down from the cloud. And to your point, it's saving a lot of time and efficient, and making me much more efficient as a business owner.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're in that environment where if you can't do it from your cell phone or your iPad, you're just not flexible enough to compete.
Yeah, yeah. And as we talk about the telecommuting and businesses continue to offer that to their employees as well, mm-hmm. what are some of the unique challenges as it relates to a large organization have a significant number of telecommuters at home?
Right. Yeah, some of the gaps that are getting closed with technology is the training and onboarding. You know, people who work from home, historically, it's much harder for them to communicate one-on-one with their director or their manager. So using, you know, things like Skype and WebEx, they're able to be able to coach and train and make sure that even from home, I can measure your productivity and I can make sure that my business is moving forward.
In our closing minute or so together, what are some of the most common questions, just a couple of questions that you get from a lot of small businesses as it relates to their business?
Yep. So specifically to the people who are working from home, the biggest concern is reliability and support.
Mm-hmm.
Comcast does a great job in making sure that we have 24/7 live manned call centers. The business services group specifically has dedicated call centers who can answer all the technical questions, whether it's 3 a.m. or 3 p.m. And, you know, we really put that to rest and make them feel confident that they can drive their business.
Okay. And so we have about a minute or so. I'm just curious, is there anything else new coming from Comcast Business? Anything you want to tip us today on?
Sure.
Absolutely. I like to break that business news. Come on, give it to me.
Yep, there's always new stuff coming, and that's what's made this fun for me to work here for the last 8 years. We've got some really nice stuff coming out. We call it ActiveCore. It is a software-based managed service that our business team has launched. I kid around that it's managed everything, right? We can manage your routers. We can manage your Wi-Fi. We can manage your internal network.
That's incredible.
We do it all with software. And then, you know, it was teased at the Consumers Electronics Show. Our CEO teased, we've got 10 gig coming over cable.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, 10 gig, I can't imagine. I'm still way back on 50 gigs.
When I started with Comcast in 2010, 25 meg was blown.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, I tell you what, how can people get more information? The website very quickly is? Yep.
Business.comcast.com.
One more time?
Business.comcast.com.
Well, Brad Gramblin, Director of Enterprise Sales for Comcast Business. I should say Brad Gramblin. And we want to thank you very much for coming in and just giving us the latest update and latest support for entrepreneurs and what they can do to continue to run an efficient, cost-effective business as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
Good. And by the way, before we go, real quick, who's winning a national championship?
In wrestling?
In basketball.
Oh, geez.
No good. Okay. You're not going to say it?
No, I was going to say Penn State was probably going to win the wrestling national
all right.
championship.
Let's get to the, we'll give you that.
I think Michigan's going to be top three, though.
Uh-oh.
We'll see.
All right. All right, we can talk about this all day. We're going to have another show focused on it. Again, that's Mr. Brad Gramblin. We want to thank you very much for coming in. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Good. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's on this cold weekend morning in the Motor City. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying that nice, hot, cup of coffee, as I always like to say. Yes, it's coming. It's the beginning of March. Spring officially is coming in 3 weeks. I know, don't send you over the comments. My patience is getting thin as well. But you know what? We live in a great state with four wonderful seasons. But, Doak, there is one thing I got to say.
What's that?
Fix the doggone roads.
Oh, yeah.
I know a friend of mine was driving the other day, and it went flush. And the tire went flat immediately.
Yeah.
And then I went from one side, from the west side to the east side on 696. I saw three cars in the right lane changing tires. I mean, oh, my gosh.
But it's pretty brutal out there, that's for sure. There are landmines everywhere.
Landmines everywhere. All right. But we're going to get through it all. And we're going to have a great conversation to help get you through with Ms. Constance Logan. And she's the district director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. And she's out of downtown Detroit, but she handles the state of Michigan. She's a wonderful person. I've known Connie for a long time. Connie, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I got to thank you publicly for giving me the opportunity several months ago to host a and speak at your 10th anniversary for one of your major programs.
Yeah, Emerging Leaders Program. Yeah, Mark, you did a great job. As you know, you and I started out together with kind of leading that program. Mm-hmm. It was only appropriate to have you to come back as we celebrate our 10th year anniversary. So thank you for facilitating that. So
absolutely.
We appreciate it.
My pleasure. We're here to talk about entrepreneurship and the SBA. So very briefly, before we jump into the rest of the comments and conversation, overview of the SBA.
So we are the United States Small Business Administration, not to be confused with the Small Business Association, which is a membership organization. We're federal. So we are the premier economic development federal agencies that help small businesses start, grow, and recover.
So recently, people probably a little bit confused, there was a partial government shutdown. Correct. Was the U.S. SBA affected by that?
Absolutely. The U.S. Small Business Administration was furloughed. My entire staff was furloughed. SBA was officially closed for business.
Okay. And so as of, I think it was the 15th or something like that, that's when the shutdown ended.
28th.
The 28th. My bad. The 28th of January. My apologies. The 28th of January. Post-furloughs, talk about that. How has it been like? I mean, everything's back up. It's functional. It's running. Talk to us about the post-furlough situation.
So post-furlough, we're back at the office. The staff and I are very excited about being back because we have a very strong passion for helping small business owners. And just like they felt the void when we were out, we felt the void as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're back. As I mentioned, the staff is enthusiastic. It took us probably about a week or so to get passwords reset, a lot of administrative things back in order. But now we're back operational and getting access to capital, small businesses access to free counseling, and also the contract services, which are our three core services.
And one of the things you were sharing with me recently is about processing loans and the amounts. Talk to our listeners about the types of loans that you've been processing, the amounts. Just kind of give them a flavor for that as well.
Well, without being too technical, so SBA, we don't lend directly. We guarantee, so we work very closely with the banks. And so in the event a small business owner, there are some gaps with them qualifying, the SBA guarantee program would be an option. So we have our flagship program, which is a 7A, which deals with things like working capital. Our 504 loan program deals with more fixed assets if you want to purchase a building, for example. And we have microloan programs for those loans that if you really don't need a lot of money, but you need money to get started, so $5,000 to $50,000. We have micro lenders. But since the furlough, SBA has approved over 7,900 loans for a total of about $3.7 billion. So we are making a difference.
Is that number national?
It's national.
Okay, so it's not Michigan specific.
Yes.
You know, and you've been with the SBA for quite a while. There's some great news this past week in Detroit. I mean, it's like, wow, between the automotive industry, certainly, you know, talking about 5,000 or 6,000 jobs on the east side and across metro Detroit. That's great news. A lot of great news when it comes to entrepreneurship in the city as well. I know we still got a ways to go, but it seems to be that burgeoning, you know, excitement and enthusiasm that continues to grow. As the SBA person here, I know you have a team of people. Are you seeing that here out of your office, to that enthusiasm growing out of Detroit?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. From the downtown Detroit corridor to Midtown, throughout the entire city, the enthusiasm is there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're very excited, again, to be here to serve those small businesses. Some of them don't know what they don't know. And as a matter of fact, I met a young lady who will probably be on your show, and we had a conversation about SBA, and she was like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So we're going to connect.
Good.
So it's a great thing. So yeah, absolutely.
Have you noticed an increase in phone calls of businesses wanting to get loans? This is still over the last couple of years.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And also just access to services.
Yeah.
They want services. How do we start? Where do we go? Can you help me with business plans? How can I read my financials? And we have so many programs that can really serve the gamut of small business owners.
That's cool. You know, we talked about the FERGO, the post-FERGO. We're talking about the loans. But you also have some great partners that you work with that you also, I believe, wanted to acknowledge even as you were going through the challenges back in January.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for saying that. So as you mentioned, so I have a total of 14 of us staff in Michigan, but we couldn't do what we do without our resource partners. The Small Business Development Center, we have SCORE, we have our Women's Business Centers, and we have a Veterans Business Outreach Center. And so while we were furloughed, those organizations really kind of carried the small business community because mm-hmm. they aren't federally funded. Partially, we fund them, and they get a grant to do what they do. So they were not shut down. So we relied heavily upon them to really serve that gap, and they did a phenomenal job. And they are really part of our family, and I do want to publicly thank each and every one of them for doing what they do.
And how many people do you have on your team out of Detroit?
I have a total of 13.
Okay, so you have 13 people.
And I have one in Grand Rapids.
I have one in Grand Rapids. And we're talking to Connie Logan this morning, and she's the district director for the SBA, and she's out of downtown, where she handles the state of Michigan, right?
Yes, correct.
So you have 13 employees. Anytime you go through a situation like that, I'm sure that morale has to be a challenge. And people are like, okay, is it going to happen again? Or if I come back, is it going to? Talk to us about the morale downtown in your office with your staff members as well as across the state. And how did you manage to, I'm assuming it's improved, but talk to us about that. But how did you manage to get that morale back to where it needed to be?
Yeah, so you're right. Just the uncertainty of it all. The good thing is that the last time that the furlough situation, there was a debate about whether we were going to be furloughed the second time, but now we have a budget that's going to last through September 30th.
Okay.
So that fear goes away, right? So everybody knows, okay, we're fine. And so, you know, when we came back, I think the first day we came back, you know, we had kind of like a little coming back party. You know, had some bagels and sat down and talk about how do you feel. And really showed them how much we appreciate them. I share with them how much a lot of people had called me even while we were out to talk about we missed the employees. And so I think the main thing is to really show them. We showed them how much we missed them, how much we appreciate them. And we did some things like some little, we have something like cash awards, Star Wars, time off, just to kind of give them that incentive to keep going. And so that was really appreciated.
So people understand when someone is furloughed in that situation, you can't access emails or anything, can you? I mean, you literally shut down.
We're literally shut down.
Wow.
We're literally shut down.
So I got to ask you, when you went back, did you have like a backlog of emails?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. And that's a challenge because my staff are very passionate about what they do. And so to be that far behind and to try to play catch up. So we spent probably the first week just responding to emails because, quite frankly, some small business owners did not know we were furloughed because mm-hmm. some people don't really think of us as being federal.
Right.
Because when you think of large agencies like HUD, those agencies, but we were a small civilian agency. And so we were impacted. And so we were still getting emails. People mm-hmm. thought we were still operational.
You know, and let me just say, let me pause for a second and publicly thank all of our federal employees. I don't think I've said that before, Doug. That's the first time I acknowledge them. And particularly those, you know, in your team, and for the professionalism and just coming back and doing the job that needs to get done. So I just want to, absolutely, my pleasure, because I work very closely with you, and I've worked with, everybody knows, I probably worked with in this city alone, I think I've interviewed and worked with over 1,000 small businesses.
Yeah.
So it's even personal for me. Oh, thank you. It's a personal for me. And people were calling me. I'm like, hey, I'm not a pro here, so hang on.
Right.
But let's kind of move ahead. Small Business Week is coming up in May, the month of May. And I have a workshop that takes place that week, but they're going to focus this on you. Talk to us about Small Business Week and the SBA's plans for that particular week.
Yeah, so May the 5th through the 11th is National Small Business Week. So each district, we have 68 districts across the country. And so each district typically has like a flagship event. So ours is Michigan Celebrates, held in Lansing. And it's going to be May the 8th. And at that celebration, we collaborate with the Michigan Small Business Development Center, as well as some other founding partners. And during that event, it's a great event. It's a red carpet event. Mm-hmm. We acknowledge the 50 business to watch. We acknowledge our small business owner, veterans business owner, woman small business owner. And this year, I started something called the District Directors Award. And that's the first time. And so that award is an organization or individual that has really gone above and beyond to advocate for small business owners and work closely with us.
So some of those categories you just referenced, and I'm still working on winners and things like that, so it's only March. But, talk to us briefly about what makes a business get acknowledged in one of those categories. What are you looking for?
Each category has its own criteria. So Small Business Person of the Year would have, of course, you got to look at revenues and sales. We also look at things like job creation. We look at their involvement in the community. So it's a host of criteria, but it's a very holistic approach.
Mm-hmm. In our closing couple of minutes we have together, so and not the winners. I know Detroit is the population center, Metro Detroit, and 50% of the state's population. But I would have to guess that the winners are coming from across the entire state of Michigan.
Entire state of Michigan.
So irrespective of you living in Metro Detroit versus the UP or the western part of the state, chances are someone's going to get recognized, not just here in Detroit.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the entire state. You can self-nominate or people can nominate you. So that's any business in the state of Michigan.
I went one year. I can't remember what year it was. That was a beautiful event. And that one, the year I went, was in downtown Lansing. It was a hotel or someplace, or maybe the convention center. I don't remember. But it was like, it was kind of like the state of Michigan's version of the Oscars, if you will.
Exactly. It's grown so large that now, I think last year we had about 800 people.
Where's it going to be this year?
The Breslin Center. President Center Lansing.
Is that where, hey, Doug, is that where the...
Yeah, that's my home.
Does Michigan State play the President Center?
Yeah, yes, they do.
Oh, you got to move it.
No.
Come on.
Great place to have
it. We're friends with both.
So it's going to be at the President Center.
That's right. Okay.
So what is at the, that's where all the activities are going to be?
Yep, okay. That's all the activity. And the Tuesday before, we're having an event at the Governor's Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like a pre-event prior to the event on May 8th.
Are all these events open to the public or invitation only? Or
no, it's open to the public. Okay. You can purchase tickets.
How much are tickets?
They range, I think, like maybe $50 to $85, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely. If you go to our website, which is www.sba.gov/MI, and there should be a link to Michigan Celebrates.
Well, I got to tell you, Connie, it's always good to have you in. This is a wonderful event. And in closing, again, National Small Business Week is?
May 5th through the 11th.
May 5th through the 11th. To go out and support this great event on May 8th or something like
May
that?
May 8th.
May 8th, all
the
right.
The Breslin Center.
Absolutely. Again, that's Connie Logan, District Director from the SBA. We thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
Same here.
Absolutely. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's, and we're going to be talking about growing Detroit's African-American middle class. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. As you're sitting back on this cold March morning in the Motor City, you may be sitting back and reading your local newspaper and listening to us on AM 1270. As you know, I give my shout-outs to Sam Show every single week. So AM 1270 here in Detroit, you might be reading your free press or reading your mobile technology, or you might be listening across the country through our many .coms, which I do appreciate, including radio.com, soundcloud.com, wwjnewsradio.com, thehubdetroit.com, and leegroupinnovation.com. So you're listening across the country. We want you to sit back and relax and enjoy the conversation. You might be having your nice hot cup of coffee, as I always like to say, and reading your local newspaper and technology. Just enjoy the conversation with our two very special guests, Ms. Anika Goss and also Mr. Edward Lynch. And they're both with the Detroit Future City here in the Motor City. And they recently published a great report. Anika is the executive director for the organization. And Edward is a planner at Detroit Future City as well. He coordinates external efforts for land use, open space, and long-range policy issues. And Anika just runs the whole show. Is that right? Is that the simple way of putting it?
I guess.
Well, we're going to have a very important conversation here, because I saw this report, as everybody else did, as it relates to growing Detroit's African-American middle class put out by your organization. So, Anika, let's start with the very basics and give us an overview first of Detroit Future City, the organization.
Right. Well, thanks for having us, Mark. So Detroit Future City is a nonprofit think and do tank. We are responsible for the 50-year economic development and land use framework, the Detroit Strategic Framework for Detroit. So it really sort of sets out the vision for what Detroit should look like over the next 50 years. And so we primarily focus on land use and sustainability and economic development issues. And then we also work on keeping Detroit Detroiters informed through research and publications.
You know, I got to tell you, every time I see you, I think the last time I saw you, I put out a report and I moderated a session. You were on a panel that I was moderating. And you always captivate the audience with this report.
Oh, thank you.
Because I think that people really want to know, you know, exactly what's going on when we talk about Detroit and the future of the city. So kind of give us an overview, if you could, of this particular study, Growing Detroit's African-American Middle Class.
So we really felt like our previous report was 139 square miles. And one of the issues that came up in that report was that we found that 75% of Detroiters were making $50,000 or less. And for us, that was really a trigger for our staff and our board to be able to say, we need to look at this issue further. If we're wanting to advance Detroit, we have to be able to understand the middle class and where there are opportunities to grow that $50,000 number. Are there opportunities to do that? And to make sure that it's not just an attraction strategy.
Yeah, and Edward, you had a major role in this report. Kind of share with us, share with the listeners your role as part of this report.
Yeah, and so in pulling this together, so did a lot of the research and a lot of the background data. We also, through our office, courted and talked to about 70 different individuals as part of focus groups to see kind of what the issues that people were facing and kind of what people thought about Detroit as a city and their perceptions of Detroit as a city.
So you did these focus groups. And I'm a native Detroiter. I go way back. I'm not going to say how long ago. So my question, though, even going through the focus groups, we know what the common issues have been over the years, right? Crime, education, that people are concerned about, public safety, whatever. What were some of the key findings that you were finding that might be slightly different than those basic things that we've been hearing forever? What are some other critical findings, if you could share?
And so the you hear the usual things, schools and things like that is a major issue for people, particularly people with children. But also you hear kind of other issues, automotive insurance. is a huge issue for Detroiters, and Detroiters pay quite a bit for automotive insurance. Property taxes were a huge issue, and so like those big kind of cost of living. And so while we hear Detroit as a place that's often the very very cheap and inexpensive to live, there's a lot of things that add on to that kind of cost of living. We also hear about things like home ownership and people wanting the opportunities to not only own their home, but to live in neighborhoods where you do have lots of home ownership.
Yeah. But Anika, so many people are moving into Detroit. Come on, what's the problem?
They are. And we talk about that actually in the report. It's not as many people as we would think. And I think what we're probably most concerned about is that without any real intentionality, there's a really good chance that Detroit may not grow equitably. I mean, you can build all the houses and bring in all the businesses back. And it would be very likely, like a lot of cities that are growing, that Detroit would then grow to be upper middle class and white. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that we can really, all Detroiters really value, is the diversity in Detroit. That's what makes it beautiful, right? But you have to be intentional about that. No other city has really been able to grow inclusively to make sure that there's a place for people of all ethnicities and all income spectrums to live in the city. And we have a real opportunity to do that here.
You know, I've talked about this before. I wrote a story about that in Cranes recently, and I don't call it two Detroits. I call it Detroit divide. Mm. And my concept is exactly what you just referenced. It's like, we all know, it's pretty candid here, downtown, midtown, quarter-town are hot areas, no question. A lot of economic development is going on in those particular areas, but how do you continue to push it out to the rest of the city? So thus, as opposed to using two Detroits, I coined the phrase the Detroit divide. So my question is, as it relates to growing Detroit's African-American middle class, you have some interesting data, Edward or Nika, when you can join in on the conversation, about how many people we need to attract. And so kind of talk to us about those findings, if you could.
Yeah, and so when we first kind of looked at the data, you see a very kind of big gap in the amount of middle class in the city of Detroit, particularly when it comes to the region or the United States as a whole. So across the region, 38% of households are middle class. In Detroit, that's only 25%.
Only 25%.
Yeah, and so to kind of bring the share of middle class households in Detroit up to that share of the region, we'd have to add about 33,800 households or middle class households to the city. So this isn't necessarily just attracting new people in, but we think of a key part of that strategy is improving the economic situation of those already living in Detroit. And so it's a really kind of a combination of attracting new people, growing new residents into the middle class, but also a kind of a key thing that gets in here is creating places and desirable neighborhoods for the middle class residents of the city.
Anika, how do we do that?
Well, I think there are a lot of ways that we can think about doing that. One, we actually have to look at being really intentional about how we grow our middle class. We are looking at new jobs, so that great big Jeep announcement. Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about, that there has to be new opportunities for employment. We have to focus on education attainment and then increasing wage in general. And so some of that increasing wage, which I think is going to be key to Detroit, and it's a combination of that. Like, we have to be able to look at Detroiters and people. And then we also have to look at Detroit and place, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we can increase wages, increase job competitiveness to make sure that we can, like, you can't, even if we attract a bunch of new teachers, right, and being intentional about recruiting new teachers, new doctors to Detroit, we have to make sure that there are places for people to live here, right? We want them to be able to want to live in our neighborhoods. So that intentional focus of community development, of actually building out that new environment, new infrastructure, and some of that is already happening. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see the beginnings of that in the neighborhoods, but we've got to do a lot more of it. And there's a real, we talk about in the report, this idea of near middle class neighborhoods as places of opportunity. And I really believe that if we're able to be, to have this really strategic focus on Detroit's neighborhoods, as well as the primary issues that are, that we look at individually right now, like insurance and taxes and schools and all of the other things that are barriers to living in Detroit, if we start looking at those as economic engines, that if we can resolve those, we can also, that has to be a part of the economic puzzle to bringing Detroit back, including the investment of neighborhoods, including bringing in and opening up for new jobs and higher wages in Detroit.
We are talking to Anika Goss, and she's the executive director for Detroit Future City, and also Mr. Edward Lynch, and he's a planner at Detroit Future City. And we're kind of going through and unpacking briefly this most recent report, which is Growing Detroit's African-American Middle Class. It's a nice segue because our last guest this morning grew up in Northwest, lives in Northwest, and grew up and investing and started a business in Northwest Detroit. A great example of someone who has reached back into their neighborhood, and it kind of gets to what you're addressing right here as well.
Absolutely. I think this, Edward and I were talking yesterday while we were preparing to come in and speak with you about this small business isn't really included in the report. And one of the reasons it's not included in the report is because I think we fall behind in really supporting the growth of the businesses themselves.
Yeah.
So we're great at starting new businesses, but we're not creating enough opportunities for these businesses to grow so they can create a lifestyle and improve the economic mobility of households that are here.
And we're going to come back over to you as you were working on this report. Just a couple of key recommendations coming out of it include what?
Yeah, and so I think growing the middle class is kind of the big key recommendation, but also doing so in an equitable and inclusive way and making sure that everyone is benefiting from the revitalization that's occurring in Detroit. And so we think that kind of the middle class and tracking the middle class is the best way to make sure that that's happening. So it's particularly tracking the African-American middle class is the best way to make sure that's happening. Because not only are we tracking whether people are improving their economic situation, but also that they're staying in the city of Detroit and that we're providing places and desirable places for people to live.
In our closing 30 seconds, Anika, so who gets this report next? How do we start getting it done?
Yeah.
Who's going to do it?
Well, the report, I think the audience for the report are really policymakers and investors, okay, right? We want there are some key policy issues that can happen that we're hoping people pay attention to. But I want Detroiters generally to be able to understand data about their own city and to feel really personal about the information that we're provided. So I'm excited to get started on all of these recommendations.
Okay. And a website, if people go see it, is where?
Yep, www.detroitfuturecity.com.
I think it's a fascinating report, and I want to applaud you, Anika, and your team, you and your team, Edward, as well, for doing this. Because every time I see this report, I just want to talk to you. Because I'm a Detroiter, I'm a native, and this is important to me as well. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having us, Mark.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. I want you all to check out the report as well, some good information as we continue to focus on growing Detroit's African-American middle class. The opportunity for a prosperous Detroit is around the corner. We just got to keep pushing ahead. Go out and make it a great day. Good. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. I hope you are enjoying the conversation. Great information is being shared with you today. And, you know, that last interview with Detroit Future City about growing Detroit's African-American middle class is a great example and a great lead-in to this conversation with a wonderful young lady, because she started a business in her neighborhood. We're going to have her share her story, Ms. Asia Hamilton, and she's the owner of the Northwest Art Gallery. Is that right?
Northwest Gallery of Art.
Northwest Gallery of Art in Northwest Detroit. Asia, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's so great to meet you for the first time.
Vice versa.
So you heard that last conversation, and I thought about you. Give us quickly your perspective of what was shared, because it ties in nicely with what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, growing Detroit's middle class is really just about, you know, believing in placement. Okay. I decided to open up a gallery in my neighborhood, feeling kind of pushed out of the downtown area. I had had spaces in the New Center area and Woodbridge, which are now, a lot of businesses are, flocking to that area because of the surge of, people in the Midtown area. So, I said, what better place to open up a space but in the neighborhood that I grew up in, which was a flourishing middle-class community when I was growing up.
What, you know? Is that Rosedale Park?
No, Rosedale Park, Grandmont Rosedale, and, tree-lined streets and, movie theaters, grocery stores. We had that growing up in our area, and it just felt like a good community.
So how long have you had your gallery?
Oh, we just had celebrated our one-year anniversary.
So my question was, what were you doing before you opened your gallery? Have you always been an entrepreneur, or just something that's new into the next phase of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started my journey in photography. I have my degree in fine art photography. So I started just doing, working in curatorial for various different places. But when I moved back to Detroit, I started, freelancing for the Free Press, Detroit News, Our Magazine, and just really doing a lot of freelance work around the city. I got into doing teaching, and so I opened and started a business called Photo Sensei, where I do photography tours and workshops around the Detroit area.
Where'd you move back to Detroit from?
From Chicago.
Oh, okay. I was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to Chicago, by the way. I gotta give a shout out to Chicago. They just had I guess they have two African-American women still in the running for the top spot in Chicago.
Yes.
In fact, I lived in Chicago, before I forget, when they elected the very first African-American mayor, Harold Washington.
Yes.
And at that time, it was Coleman Young, Harold Washington, and Stokes out of Cleveland back in those days.
And people love Harold Washington.
Yeah, they did. And I remember the day he passed, too. But back to this conversation. So why did you decide to get into art? Was the art gallery your dream?
Yeah,
talk to us about that.
My degree is in fine art. So, just growing up in the art field, when I say growing up in art field, I mean, I was kind of around art growing up a little bit. You know, my dad's salon was right next door to George Nnamdi's gallery in the David Whitney building. I was able to, go on field trips and stuff at the DIA and see art. And I was always, drawn to that. So when I moved back here to Detroit, even though I was freelancing, I was still doing exhibitions and art shows. I was just, making sure to get my work and art out there as an artist. So I started doing art in places like the Biegas Gallery and pop-up places around the downtown Detroit area, and just wanted to just kind of have a space and a platform for not just myself, but my peers who wanted to display their art. So it's always been in the making to have my own space and create an environment for particularly African-American artists to showcase their work.
And that's going to be my question. My question is, the type of art that you carry is predominantly African-American. And what has the acceptance been since you opened? You just had your one-year anniversary in the neighborhood where you grew up in northwest side of Detroit. What's the overall response been to the acceptance of people, of you going back into a neighborhood to open business?
Oh, I mean, we've had a huge response.
Good.
We've gotten definitely a lot of people that come in. But, one of the differences in bringing in our gallery to the neighborhood is just teaching people more about collecting art and being, patrons of the art as opposed to just coming in and seeing it. I want to be able to educate people on the importance of being a collector and being a part of, just having a more diverse network,
Do people understand that? I mean, so do they understand when they first come in? A lot of times people go to art, you know, the art galleries, they want to see the art.
Mm-hmm.
But do a lot of the customers who now come in understand what a collector really does?
Or is it, no, they don't.
Yeah.
Not, no, they don't. They are really just drawn to it, with the idea. With the gallery, I definitely pride myself on creating experiences. So when people come, they're engulfed in the art. They're hearing it, they're feeling it, they're tasting it. It's a huge experience. But I want to definitely educate people on being collectors and just knowing the importance as far as like creating a legacy for themselves, as well as, just art being a beautiful vision board, something that you can view and see in your home every day. A lot of the idea, people think like, oh, well, art is so expensive, I can't afford it. That's a big misconception. You know, a lot of galleries will do installments. They'll provide ways for you to get that piece that speaks to you. So it's not always, $50,000 piece and, it just looks good on the wall. Mm-hmm. You can have a really lovely piece of art that speaks to you, that's affordable and can be in your home.
And you talk about the experiences. Essentially, so when you have at the gallery itself, and we're talking to Miss Asia Hamilton, and she owns her own art gallery in Northwest Detroit, do you put on special programs? Do you put on programs where people can come in and learn about collecting art, or is it the traditional gallery people just primarily walk through?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're a community-based gallery, so, one of our main focuses is education. So definitely, we started something on our website called The Collector's Room, which will give you more information, tips on, how to hang art in your home, ways of purchasing art, because, when you get into the art field, you have a little, you're able to enter into some new rooms,
it's a new
community,
new world for
a lot of diverse, community. So definitely, we tell you about that, different places that you can talk with other collectors and maybe even exchange work. I've gotten some people that have inherited, art from their grandparents or, just from passed away loved ones, and they're like, well, what do I do with these pieces?
Yeah.
Where do we go with this? And, just really giving them an idea on how they can, resell them or, just prepare the next generation for, having their own pieces.
So that was my question. My question was going to be, where do you get your art from? You have someone who goes across the country and they ship it. I mean, they look for it, they buy it, or... where are you getting these pieces? And are these predominantly Detroit artists or national?
They are. I do have, I make sure that at least 50% of the artists in the gallery are from Detroit. But our last exhibit, or the exhibit that's up right now, which is called Supreme, it's an Afrofuturism exhibition. There we have artists from South Africa that have their work in there. We have an artist from Toronto, as well as an artist from Chicago. So we're going all over the world looking for art. I'm not like physically traveling all over the world.
But that's going to be like, I think people wonder that, though.
Yeah.
Do I have to get on an airplane? I got to fly it.
No, I'm researching. I'm looking. Okay. I'm finding artists. And one of my niches is finding, the next artist. It's hard to get a Kerry James Marshall in my gallery,
right.
But I can find somebody just as dope or just as amazing as a Kerry James Marshall, and their work is exquisite. And you can have a beautiful piece in your home for a lot less.
This is a great conversation. You're teaching me a lot. I've gone to many art galleries, but I don't always understand the art of collecting pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand always where people get the art. I mean, we've all been down to the DIA and these other art galleries. Mm-hmm. Doke, I'm sure you have been as well. But I always wonder where they got the pieces from. So, no, you are educating me. Again, we're talking to Asia Hamilton. And she's the owner of Northwest
Gallery of Art.
Gallery of Art in Northwest Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Please. Oh, I was going to say, and the Norwest, you know, that was from the Norwest Theater.
I remember Norwest. We talked about that on the
phone.
Yeah,
the Norwest Theater used to be on Grand River.
Grand River.
We, you know, when I was, you know, growing up, that was our hangout. We'd walk up to the Norwest and see some amazing image, you know, movies and, you know, for everything from Purple Rain to E.T., you know. So I wanted to create another environment that was kind of like a hangout. Let's come up, let's go up to the Norwest Gallery and see what's going on up there and see another form of amazing imagery.
Absolutely. And then there's the Night Arts Challenge.
Yeah, the Night Arts Challenge. Recently, we were granted the Night Arts. We were recipients for the Night Arts Challenge. And that's a matching grant that the Night Arts Foundation will provide for us doing, you know, continuing our efforts in the community. So if we raise $11,000, they will match that with an additional $11,000. So right now we're in the process of, you know, just doing fundraising for that.
You know, I could talk to you for another hour. I really could. You know, so in our closing 30 seconds or so, talk to us about the location. Where exactly are you located? The website, you get more information.
Yeah, we are on Grand River between Evergreen and Otter Drive on the northwest side of Detroit, close to Southfield Freeway, close to Evergreen. And our email address is, our website is norwestgallery.com. Our Facebook is Norwest Gallery. Our Instagram is Norwest Gallery. We keep it the same across the board.
I want everybody to go out and support her business, the Detroit-based business, trying to make it happen. And she's making it happen in her neighborhood. Asia Hamilton, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We wish you a lot of success.
Thank you. Thank you.
Invite me to come, please.
Oh, please. Come
all
to
right.
our next exhibit.
I appreciate that. All right, Doug. All right. I want you to go out and make it a great day, man.
All right. You too.
Thank you. We want you all to go out and make it a great day, make it a great week. And we will check you out next week on Small Talk with Mark S. Brought to you by Domino's and Happy March.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.